Okay, thanks. Before I start here, just want to acknowledge this guy. It's David Schleter, my master's student, who did all this work, and he couldn't make it to the meeting. He graduated a couple months ago. All right, so this study started innocently enough. I had several producers come up and ask me about frost seeding clover into pastures. And they asked me, well, you know, should I broadcast the seed or shall I drill it? And I figured that, you know, drilling would probably work better, but I really didn't know. So I went to the literature to look, and I figured someone must have done this study. And I was actually surprised to find that there really were very few studies that had actually compared these seeding methods, and particularly in our region in Virginia. And so I decided to do a study to compare broadcast frost seeding versus no-till drilling of clover into a permanent pasture. And so the objectives, at least, were quite simple, just to compare the effectiveness of broadcast versus no-till drilling clover in the wintertime, with the hypothesis that no-till drilling would be better at establishing clover. But we wanted to take it a little bit deeper and also try to identify the variables that it might actually be influencing the success of clover establishment. So we actually did a factorial experiment later. So the grazing experiment that we did to look at the seeding methods involved four pastures that we had at our college farm outside of Blacksburg. These are 2.5 acre pastures, typical pastures of Virginia, mainly tall fescue and bluegrass. The pastures were mob grazed fairly unevenly, as I'll show you, but they were mob grazed in the winter to remove the existing vegetation. And in February of 2009, we broke the pastures in half, and we broadcasted a mixture of white and red clover on one half of the pasture, and we drilled in the seed on the other half. And it was not ideally the way I wanted to do this study, but it's what we could do with the land that we had available. And then in the spring, we strip grazed the pastures. We used a fairly high stocking rate initially, breaking these 2.5 acre pastures into 6 strips, and grazing them pretty hard initially to suppress the grass competition with the clover. And then David made a number of different measurements. He measured clover seedling density in April 2009. He measured herbage mass and species composition from destructive harvests, and also did destructive harvests of the sod to count plant populations and also look at stolen. So here's some of his data, some of his results. These are clover seedlings in the frost-seeded, or that actually should be broadcast, and the drilling. And there were more clover seedlings in the frost in the broadcast treatment at the p equals 0.1 level of significance. And if we look at it a different way, though, we also measured the amount of grass biomass or residual biomass that was present on the plots when we oversowed the clover, and that's here, the x-axis, and here are the number of clover seedlings. These are the broadcast treatment and the drilling treatment. And you can see with the drilling, there was a very clear linear relationship that there were far less clover seedlings with more grass biomass that was present at sowing. Again, these were mob grazed, but because of the way the mob grazing ended up working out, we had a little bit of variation in the amount of biomass that was actually left, which actually was kind of fortuitous because it produced some interesting results. And then the broadcast, we had more seedlings with low grass biomass at sowing, but we had this kind of threshold here, about 250 grams per square meter, where we had a big drop-off in the number of seedlings. So as we kind of expected, the amount of residual biomass that was present when we overseeded was important, at least in influencing the amount of seedlings that emerged. And then David looked at the different components of the actual forage mass, the grass, red clover, white clover, and the weeds. And the drill treatment in FS is frost-seeding or broadcast treatment. And you can see here in 2009, there was absolutely no difference in the actual amount of biomass, which kind of contradicted to what we expected. We expected the drilling to work better. It didn't. Same thing in 2010, absolutely no difference in forage biomass in any of the components, and I won't show you the 2011 data, but that also showed the same thing. In terms of the destructive harvests, this is 2009 white clover and red clover. This is the number of plants per square meter. And there were more plants in the broadcast versus the drilling in 2009, but that disappeared probably due to mortality or competition in 2010. And the stolen data wasn't particularly interesting either. One thing that was actually pretty interesting, though, that we found, if we looked at the number of clover seedlings that emerged in April in the spring after we frost seeded, and we related that to the amount of clover biomass we ended up later in the season in August, we found a very strong relationship between these two variables, which, I mean, that may kind of make some sense, but it doesn't necessarily have to be true. But what it suggests is that it's very important to have a lot of these clovers emerge in the spring to end up with a lot of clover biomass later on. And I'll get to that more with the factorial experiment. If you like to look at the same graph, this is the number of seedlings in 2009. Also predicted clover biomass the subsequent year in 2010, although, as you might expect, not quite as a tight relationship. So clearly, providing an environment to get a lot of clover seedlings established seemed to be very important. So what we did from there is decided to do a factorial experiment to test some of the ideas we had on some of the more important variables we thought were influencing the success of clover establishments. We did this also at the college farm. We chose a tall fescue, a pasture. It's actually not a pasture, but a tall fescue area. Very low in P and K, really hadn't been managed for anything in particular. And we did a factorial experiment where we had a whole plot factor of fertilization with either P or K, either added or not, based on the soil test recommendations. And then a subplot factor of a grass biomass at sowing. So the high biomass treatment had about 8 inches of grass when we overseeded the clover, and the low had about an inch of grass biomass, if you want to look at it that way. And then a split plot where we manipulated cutting frequency, a high cutting frequency, which tried to mimic a rotational grazing situation, and a low cut frequency to mimic a hay harvest situation. And again, Dave looked at clover seedling density. This is the amount of standing biomass at planting. Again, high is a lot of biomass. Low is, again, about an inch of stubble. And you can see a very strong relationship, as we kind of predicted from our grazing experiment. The less biomass you had present, the more seedlings you ended up with. And in terms of the actual amount of clover we ended up in these treatments, this is white clover biomass here. We found, for both white and red clover, found a very strong interaction between clipping frequency and standing biomass at planting. So these bars here are low standing biomass, so that's very little grass biomass at sowing. And this is the high grass biomass at sowing. High cutting frequency and low cutting frequency, so high and low. And so what the interaction suggests is that the maximum amount of both red and white clover biomass depended not only on the amount of standing biomass that was present when we sowed the clover, but also a frequency of defoliation, more frequent defoliations. You really need both of those things, not just one, to maximize clover biomass. And at least for red clover, but not for white clover, we found that P and K was also important and a pretty strong interaction between P and K fertilization and also cutting frequency, which suggests that in addition to the amount of biomass that's present when we planted, cutting frequency, but at least red clover seemed to be more sensitive to the P and K status of the soils relative to white clover, at least. And so we had three general conclusions from this work. One, in terms of the overall overseeding method, we found that environmental conditions were much more important in influencing the establishment of clover and also the management. Rainfall, very important. I didn't show the rainfall data, but rainfall in 2009 was very high, very good for establishing clover. But a number of other things that we did, we soil tested those pastures. We made sure that P and K, pH was good. Mob grazing was very important. Overseeding those clovers very early in our part of the world in February or late January is very important. And then rotational grazing, fairly intensive grazing, but resting those paddocks and allowing those clovers to establish, very important, at least that first year. And then in terms of the factorial experiment that we could find is that the maximum amount of clover biomass depended both on the amount of standing biomass that was present when we overseeded the clover and also how frequently we defoliated that. And I think that's kind of intuitive, some of the things that we know about clover establishment, but what was, I think, pretty interesting was how strong the interaction was. So you really need both of those these things to maximize clover biomass. So if you go in and you mob graze your pastures to the ground, which you want to do, and then you overseed your clover, you can get a lot of seedlings. But if you get lax on your grazing management in the spring, you may end up with no clover. By the same token, if you don't get in there and mob graze or remove all of that residual biomass, may not end up with a lot of seedlings and emerging. And even if you graze it hard in the spring, what we found is that, you know, those pastures just don't catch up. You know, the seedlings just don't seem to emerge later on. So there seems to be a very small window where you need to get a lot of seedlings established and then rotational grazing to help them along. And at least in terms of red clover, which we overseed a lot in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, also seems to be fairly sensitive to P and K. And so if you're serious about getting more red clover in your pastures, you may want to make sure your P and K concentrations are adequate. So I guess the take-home message is if you're serious about overseeding clover, you need to put a little bit of work into it and really make sure that you do multiple things to ensure you get good establishment and sustainable populations on that. So with that, we thanks. Thank you.
Plenty of time for questions.
There were no cattle or livestock in the fields at all when you did your seeding?
That's right, yeah. We did the seeding in February. The mob grazing was done in November and December, and then we overseeded in February. And then, well, there was one pasture that it just ended up the way the mob grazing went and where the waters were that it wasn't maybe mob grazed as much as I had asked the guys to mob graze it. And so, again, it's not exactly what I wanted, but I think it actually produced kind of an interesting result. So,
any other questions?